I haven't recorded in 2 weeks. Here we go!
Welcome back to True Crime Trine, podcast where the planets align and three friends, you may call us amigas, talk about true crime, astrology, and any other weird bullshit we can fit in this podcast. We are your host, Hannah.
And Meredith.
Pause for Sarah. Sarah left us for 6 weeks.
She's off enjoying life.
She went to a better place. Not heaven. She didn't die, but...
she's on sabbatical.
She basically is on sabbatical, to be honest. So Sarah's having a fun, busy time on the East Coast working for TAing for a science class, so...
Yay, science!
And I took that class 2 years ago, and so I'm like, it's a fuck ton of work. It's fun, though. But she definitely does not have time to record. Probably especially because it's midnight there.
Oh, yeah.
So there's that, too. I know I haven't met with my boss since he left because he's always been busy. So there's some pros to East Coast, West Coast time differences.
Yeah, that's true.
So we got some pre-recording in with Sarah before she left. So that means I think episode 15, when that one comes out, you'll hear Sarah again. And then 16, 17, she'll be gone again. Time is not linear for us here.
We tried to make it work and get her the whole time, but it just didn't work out. So you got us.
It's a lot of work to like pack yourself up to go across the country for like 7 weeks.
Oh my God. I can't even imagine.
I was so stressed out when I had to do it. Actually, folks, the picture of me on the website on our about page is me drinking a beer because I was way too stressed out to pack for this exact trip. So that's how I coped.
That's awesome.
I just remembered that. Anywho, this is episode 14. So I gotta follow up all the craziness from Florida Man.
Florida Man.
Florida Man and a couple women's.
Yep.
That was really fun. I was putting the website together and uploading all the pictures and I was like, oh yeah, that story. Oh yeah, that story. Florida Man. This is gonna be a slightly less lighthearted, but we're gonna do it.
It gets them prepared for the next week when I drop the bomb on them.
Yeah, this is just a precursor. It's not as bad. We want you to listen to Meredith's episode. It just makes you feel sad.
It's very sad.
Anyway, important though. I guess we could trigger warn that one.
Ahead of time?
Maybe right now?
Yeah, definitely. Episode 15 it's fucked up. It's sad. Trigger warning. If you're sensitive to domestic violence, child abuse, child neglect, things like that, then maybe take a pass. We'll totally understand. I, after reading and researching it, didn't really want to talk about it, but I promised my cousin I would, so I did it. But it's brutal. It's an interesting story, though, so I'll just say that.
This is a terrible pivot, but your cousin / our fans, I hope, suggested that story. And yes. I want to shout out the fan that emailed us that very, very nice email and even did a tarot poll for us, which was amazing.
Yeah, so shout out to Anna and her beautiful cat, Argyle, which Hannah will be adding to Murder Mittens here soon. They are out of Oregon. We really appreciate you reaching out. And the tarot pull that you did on the Soul's Journey deck was amazing. She pulled for TCT podcast and got happiness, growth, and love, which is amazing. So thank you,
Anna. We'll take it.
Yay.
Thank you. All right. So let's now terribly pivot to another topic. I'm such a good co-host. Let's pivot to my story, shall we?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I wrote the first sentence for this script. I'm going to read it out loud, but I'm pretty sure it's actually wrong. But here we go. I think this is going to be our first Angel of Death deep dive. And I thought about that a little bit more. And I think Dorothea actually could be considered an angel of death as well.
Yeah, because her people were older. Vulnerable. Some of them were failing health or health issues.
She was a caregiver of a sort to them. Like, she provided them a place to live and eat and whatnot, so.
I could see that.
So, I'm totally full of shit, but this is going to be more like, I guess we could say, canonical angel of death.
Okay.
So, this is a very specific type of criminal offender who's usually employed in the healthcare field and intentionally kills people under their care, which is fucking terrifying, because when are you at your least, like, defendable? That's not the word I'm looking for. Defensible? I don't know. When are you at your worst is when you're in the fucking hospital.
Well, yeah, and you're all doped up, so you don't know what the fuck's going on.
Ugh. Yes. So, there are different flavors of the Angel of Death. One flavor is mercy killers, who believe that their victims are suffering and beyond help, so that they're doing them a favor by putting them out of their misery. We have sadistic angels of death, which are more focused on exerting their power on their helpless victims around them. And the malignant hero, someone who intentionally endangers their victim in order to play the hero.
Okay.
I'm going to say Beth Wetlaufer, who I'm going to talk about, I think I'm going to say is a sadistic angel of death. I think power really got her hot.
Oh, right.
And
whatever floats your boat, I guess, but Jesus Christ.
But not this. We're trying to be open-minded, but we had that cannibal.
I know, right?
We're not. Our mind has a door in it. We're going to close it on some things.
Yeah, for sure.
So, an extremely vulnerable population is the elderly.
Yes.
Some facts here is since 1970, more than 90 serial murderers have been convicted after operating in hospitals, long-term care homes, and private residences with elderly charges.
90? Holy
90.
Shit.
These murderers were primarily nurses with a few doctors sprinkled in.
Okay.
Between those 90, they have killed or injured over 600 people.
What?
And an additional 2,600 deaths are connected to them but unproven.
Oh, shit.
And that's not even speaking on the number that they just medically fucked with and didn't actually end up killing.
Oh, my God.
And it's only going to get worse because there's already a huge population of elderly persons. It's going to continue to grow. And honestly, you just get more vulnerable at that place. There comes a time when you can't take care of yourself. And I've seen the backside of a nursing home, and it scares me for my future.
I know, my mom always says, just do me in before you send me in.
Yeah, especially if I start getting dementia.
Oh, for sure.
Firing squad me. And this is a very vulnerable population. They do need care. And it's also very easy to explain away their deaths. They're old. Yeah. We were expecting them to die soon anyway. Most of them aren't in the best of health to begin with. So it's pretty easy to. All right. So someone who took advantage of this vulnerable population was Beth Wetlaufer, who went on a decade-long killing spree between 2007 and 2016.
I think this is our most current case.
It is, especially for me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Her weapon of choice was insulin, and she was able to accumulate 8 victims during that time span, ranging between 75 and 96 to 96 years old.
Oh, man.
And she could have continued on with this killing spree because nobody was really paying any attention to it or looking at her with suspicion, but she decided to confess to a psychiatrist.
Interesting.
So she basically solved her own crime for everyone, but, you know.
Because they do have to report if it's...
Oh, yeah.
I know there's, like, some privacy laws, but if it's, like, an active crime or something, they're under obligation to report that.
Yeah, and Beth was definitely still extremely dangerous to the elderly, so. So, we don't know very much about her childhood. She was born Elizabeth Parker and grew up in a farming community in Ontario, Canada. Have we done a Canada case yet?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, Nova Scotia. She eh? Eh? Don't you know? She but she was in Ontario, so
okay. Never mind.
Her family were Christian fundamentalists, and so she had a fairly strict upbringing. Her father, in particular, was very controlling and expected Beth to meet his exacting standards. And you can imagine for yourself what these exacting standards would be that a fundamentalist Christian father would have of his daughter in the 1970s.
Yeah. No fun.
No fun. Not a ton happened of note during the school. Her school time, high school, is relatively uneventful. The only thing they have is a school friend remembered her pulling a fire alarm and blaming it on a boy she didn't like, which is not the worst thing I've ever heard of. And definitely something teenage Hannah might have done. I didn't do it, but I would have thought about it.
I mean, it's not a bad idea.
No, not at all. So, and it's pretty harmless, so, you know.
Plus, kids get out of class, so they're not having hurt feelings over it.
Yeah, just the boy.
Yeah.
He was probably an asshole.
Probably.
To be fair to the... Not to be unfair to the boy. She also started writing poetry. So I'm going to treat you to some high school angst.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
I love high school angst.
I do too. Let's hear it.
In her senior year, she wrote a poem for the yearbook that kind of gave some insight into her burgeoning distaste for humans. It goes as follows. The entire world's one concert, and we all make our own music. Each person's tune changes as he or she grows older. But it's all the same and inevitably pointless.
Well, that's dark.
I know, it started off kind of fine, you know, like, oh, we're an orchestra. We all work together or whatever. Nope, we're all going to die.
All right. Okay, Beth.
Just to be fair to Beth, actually, I think I am going to upload a sample of my high school poetry.
I'll see if I can find one of mine.
This one is not the worst thing I've ever written. It's just a haiku I had to write it for English class. So it could be worse, but it's still like, girl, stop trying to be this person.
I won a poetry contest at a spoken word lab in the town that I grew up in, and it was based upon this douchebag that I went to school with, and I absolutely hated him, and he was so fucking mean, and so I wrote this really not nice poem about him, and I won the contest, so something to be said for that, I guess.
You gotta write your feelings out, and teenagers definitely have a lot of feelings and a lot of hormones.
Yeah, lots of feelings.
I don't have very much of my poetry left anymore, but I do have my fan fiction handwritten because that's how we did it.
Harry Potter stuff, right?
No, it's the Little House on the Prairie.
Oh.
And Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim.
Oh.
And also a number where my family were dead and I'm an orphan, which is fine. Anyway, share your awkward poetry with us.
Yes, please. We'll show you ours if you show us yours.
I already said I was going to show you. I'm just giving it away for free at this point.
Oh, man.
Ah, Meredith will show you hers if you show us ours?
I gotta see if I can find it.
I know. I wasn't much of a poetry writer. I was just a journaler and fan fictioner.
Okay.
So after high school, Beth enrolled in a Bible college in London, Ontario. But unlike most freshmen in college, who are getting their first taste of freedom outside of the house, whatever, Beth's father took courses with her because he wanted to keep an eye on her.
Was she an only child?
Sure, actually.
I think it makes more sense if she was an only child.
Well, the reason he wanted to keep an eye on her was because of her lesbian tendencies.
Oh, well, there's that.
Somehow, before she went to college, her dad found out about a high school experience where Beth had tried to kiss a girl and had been rebuffed, and so...
What, narcs telling her dad shit?
Who's telling dad this? Actually, I think she actually might have siblings or... something, and like this was actually like a breaking point between them.
Okay.
Because they were Christian fundamentalists.
They're like, you got an F on your paper. Yeah, well, Beth kissed a girl.
Right. You're like, thanks, Beth. You got me an excuse to get out of fucking everything. Eventually, her father strongly suggested conversion therapy.
Oh, no.
But it's unclear whether she actually went through with it, so.
I just watched a Criminal Minds episode that had conversion therapy in it, and let's just say it was not good, folks. Not good.
Oh, I'll get there soon enough, because I think I started rewatching Criminal Minds, I don't know, 4 weeks ago, and I'm on season 4. I'm having a great time. So, I don't know whether she actually did the conversion therapy, which would definitely harm your psyche a lot, but she definitely did have this family pressure on her.
Okay.
That seems to be one of the, like, motivating forces for Beth. And that she had a lot of anger about it.
Oh, yeah.
In 1995, she got her nursing license and she got her first job at the Geraldton District Hospital.
Oh, no.
Did it go so well as she stole tranquilizers and opioids and took them on her shift. At one point, she stole 30 milligrams of Ativan and took it during her shift. She continued to try to do her job, but she was stumbling and slurring her words. And finally a coworker noticed and made her go lie down.
Oh.
And then Beth ended up being a patient at the hospital she worked at. But she didn't work there for long because she was fired.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So instead of revoking her license, the Ontario Nurses Association, which I assume is the union for the nurses.
Yeah.
Which seems pretty powerful based on what I read about them. But so instead of revoking her license, the nurses union tried to help by putting her on temporary incapacitation leave and referring her to a counselor for addiction treatment.
Okay.
Which I don't. Maybe it's a first offense.
Yeah, I don't hate it. Get her some help. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's okay. But so they were trying to help. They might have helped a little bit too much with the help of this extremely convincing union. Beth was able to contest the firing with Geraldine District Hospital. And she and her bosses reached a compromise that said she resigned due to health reasons instead.
Okay.
So, vague.
Yeah.
All right, quick detour into personal life land. In 1997, Beth married Donnie Wetlaufer, a truck driver and a fellow fundamentalist Baptist man.
Okay.
However, in 2007, Donnie filed for divorce, citing the fact that he caught Beth having an affair with a woman.
Okay.
So it kind of sounds like she tried.
Yeah, it does.
To, like, in the mold of what her father was, too, a little bit. But her family remained as close-minded as ever, though, and her mother insisted that the female lover was actually just a roommate, and that the reason Donnie filed for divorce was because, quote, he didn't want a sick wife, end quote, referring to the fact that Beth had struggled with depression, had attempted suicide, and had been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, which would you rather have your mom tell everyone about? Your sexual orientation or your mental health? Dude. Yeah,
no shit.
Dude.
Okay.
Ma'am. After the divorce, so she was hired by Carisant Care in Woodstock, Ontario. And they had no indication of what happened at her previous job, which I believe is the Geraldton District Hospital.
There's probably some, like, non-disclosure in there.
Yeah. And maybe stuff. She just stayed at home when she was married to Donnie. I'm not really sure, but, you know, they didn't have any idea when they hired her. They will get an idea.
Okay.
So very quickly into her tenure, she began playing with insulin. So sidetrack into insulin, because, like, man, I just love a good sidetrack. Anyway, I think most people know, but just to wrap it up super briefly, insulin's a hormone produced by the body. It promotes the absorption of glucose from the bloodstream. And then once the glucose is absorbed by your body's cells, it's broken down and produces energy that allows your cells to function. All very important shit.
Yeah.
An increase in insulin in the blood level leads to hypoglycemia, or low blood sugar, because all that glucose is getting absorbed. And then the glucose levels in your blood will decrease below normal levels. It's usually pretty easy to counteract low blood sugar. You just got to eat something pretty carby.
Okay.
That will replenish the glucose in the bloodstream. But severe hypoglycemia can lead to unconsciousness. There's the diabetic coma and potentially death.
Yeah, it's serious shit.
Yeah, serious shit. As we'll see, probably should have been monitored better.
Yeah.
Okay, like we said in the beginning, I'm finally bringing a case that has happened relatively recently. Mm-hmm. So I'm finally able to say that...
Oh, cell phones.
No, she Googled it. Because she wasn't sure how much insulin was required to end a life. And so she Googled it, and then she started experimenting on an 88-year-old diabetic woman named... I'm going to go with Clotilde.
How do you spell it?
C-L-O-T-I-L-D-E. I was going to look up pronunciation, but I forgot it.
Clotilde.
Clotilde Adriana and Clotilde's sister-in-law, Albina de Medeiros. Luckily, both women survived multiple missed dosages because other nurses noticed that they had low blood sugar and they brought it back up. So on October 11, 2007, she claimed her first victim, an 84-year-old stroke victim named James Silcox. He had dementia and was often disoriented and calling out for his wife, which is just makes me so sad. Beth said that she grew angry at the mutterings of the senile oldster and she, quote, wanted him to die.
Wow.
Probably should not have gone into nursing.
Yeah, Beth, maybe you should have found a different profession.
What do you think about that, Beth? She also describes to succumbing to what she calls a red surge of anger, and she brings this up a lot, that she just, I assume, I guess, literally sees red.
Been there, done that, still never killed nobody.
No, right? When James Silcox died, the doctor on call ruled it as death by post-surgery embolism, and it was Beth herself that filled out the paperwork.
Oh.
Joanna Birch, who is James's daughter, was also told by Beth that an autopsy wasn't necessary. And when Joanne directly asked the local coroner, quote, he was quite short with her and said, your father died in long-term care, so there's no need, end quote. No, just kidding. Quote keeps going. Does that mean he wasn't important anymore? My dad was a contributed member of this community and a war veteran, and he deserved better, end quote.
Yeah, hell yeah, he did.
Yeah.
I want an autopsy.
I require an autopsy.
It'll... Not right now, but...
Oh, wait. I didn't even think that.
Just putting it on the record. Doesn't matter how old I am.
I want an autopsy. I want a quick death if I get dementia.
Yeah.
This is my living will. This is podcast.
It's on record.
It's not notarized, but we'll be okay. Brother said at the time that there was no reason to question what the doctors declared as his father's cause of death. Which, you know, you probably wouldn't.
I mean, I get it, but at the same time, like, there's so many scandals out of these types of care facilities. I would just want to know.
I'm trying to think. I wasn't involved, so I don't know if we did autopsies on my grandmas. But we both kind of knew why they died, so...
Yeah.
Anyway. So the first time that James Silcox's son heard that his father's death was now considered a possible homicide was when he heard it on the radio.
Oh.
Which seems like someone dropped the ball.
Yes, somebody did.
So in December 2007, which is like 2 months after she had killed James Silcox, Maurice Grenat, a retired tinsmith, which I don't know what a tinsmith is, but he did become Beth's second victim.
Okay.
She later claimed that he had sexually harassed her, but I'm going to take everything that she says with a very large grain of salt.
Yeah. I don't know, but old men can be pretty dirty.
They can.
But still.
And dementia doesn't always bring out the best.
No, it does not.
It usually doesn't.
Still no excuse.
No. Get a different job.
Yeah.
It sounds like you hate this job, Beth. What are you doing?
Don't do anything in customer service either.
We gotta get you a work at home job, Beth.
Yeah.
Just don't talk to anybody.
Isn't there some, like, data entry you can do?
It should be fine at it.
Some statistics.
Well, she can use the internet. We know that.
All right.
And she used it again. In 2008, she went to a dating site online, and she met a woman.
Okay.
This connection did not blossom into a relationship, as their first in-person visit did not go well, and this woman found Beth to be off-putting.
Well, there you go. A woman's intuition.
I'm just going to quote this mystery woman. Quote, she pouted a lot and had little temper tantrums. You know, like if she didn't get something her own way, like my affection. There was a lot of childish issues with her, and I just thought, you're a grown woman. Act like it. End quote.
Yeah. No shit, Beth.
Beth! Well, in response to being completely shut down romantically, Beth tried to murder a third man, Michael Priddle, a retired butcher. We gotta protect the butchers.
Yeah.
Luckily, Michael went into hypoglycemic shock, but was able to be revived.
By other caregivers. Yeah.
It wasn't Beth, because there is that whole, the malignant hero thing where, like, they'll rush in to save the day after they already fucked up the day. But
yeah.
But she doesn't rush in. She's not that interested in saving. It's definitely a power thing, and she had a lot of anger that she was getting out in a bad way.
Yeah. Did it say, like, what the time frame is for, like, so I'm guessing she injected them through their IVs or something? Like, is there a...
Yeah. I'm not actually really sure. It probably depends on the person, because in a nursing home, Care Sent Care seemed more like a nursing home for maybe the more sickly elderly, but, like, I don't think they were all on IVs.
Okay. But, yeah, I'm just curious if there was, like, if they get an injection.
Actually, no, it's 100% an injection. We'll get to that later. I just remembered.
Okay. And then there's, like, the time frame before they go into the hypoglycemia.
I don't know how long it takes. And they're not doing autopsies, so no one's going to see a suspicious needle puncture.
Yeah, for sure.
So around this time, Beth began making what would end up being a surprising amount of confessions to her community, which were all ignored. Over tea, she confessed to her pastor and his wife that she had murdered two people and had tried to murder more.
Wait, is she related to Larissa?
No, Larissa only got one.
I mean, she's running around telling everybody about it.
She's telling everybody. You don't even know.
Jesus.
Her pastor took her hand and prayed with her and told her this was God's grace. Quote, but if you ever do this again, we will have to turn you into the police, end quote.
Again? Pastor?
Yeah, not super sure how God's grace plays into the murder of James Silcox and Maurice Granat, but literal shrug emoji. Thanks, pastors.
Mine's like hand to forehead emoji.
I gotta do a little asterisk here, and it's like, I don't hate Christians. I just hate those kind of Christians.
But isn't, like, one of the commandments, thou shall not kill?
It's a pretty important one.
Yeah. Okay. Anywho's.
Well, don't worry. She also confessed to an ex-boyfriend. So,
okay.
The crime spree ends here?
No.
It doesn't. According to Beth, his advice was, quote, why don't you stop being a nurse? Why don't you change your job so you don't have the opportunity, end quote. Which is what we've been yelling at her this whole time. But Beth...
Yeah, basically.
Beth did not stop being a nurse.
Okay.
I honestly do not know why. Beth, you'd be better at a fucking coffee shop.
I'm guessing the wages were nice?
They're not super... not in nursing homes.
Oh, okay. Well, then I really don't know, Beth.
Beth!
Maybe because you're a fucking sociopath.
Ah!
Psycho.
We nailed
it. You like to murder people.
It's hard to think like that. Beth continued doing a mediocre job at Care Sent Care.
Okay.
And part of that was probably due to her continued drug use. So she was often reported for stealing hydromorphone, which I assume is a morphine derivative.
Okay.
And she'd steal it from her patients and swap it out with laxatives.
What?
Which is what? Just, do they not have enough?
they already don't have so much of their dignity, and then you do something like that, like, just to make their life so much more
and
miserable.
And they're in pain, because you also took their pain meds.
Fuck off, Beth.
Beth, you could have given them a vitamin C tablet. I don't know. Ugh.
Water?
Literally anything besides a fucking laxative. She also made sexual remarks to the residents.
So she's sexually harassing
people. Yeah, which is kind of why I'm saying about Maurice, saying that Maurice harassed her. Meh.
So what'd she say?
It didn't tell me.
Damn it.
I know, I was really annoyed. She also made sexual remarks to, like, there were, like, teenagers volunteering at Carousel Care as well, like, get their volunteer hours in or whatever. So she also made sexual remarks to them and tried to get them to come to her house.
Okay.
Which is just what you don't want as a teenager.
Oh, man. Okay.
She also punctured a hematoma with unsterilized scissors. Microbiologists say no.
Just normal human beings say no. Jesus.
And this one's just basic human dignity. She once hoisted an elderly patient suffering from a broken hip, despite him crying out in pain the whole time.
Just for no fucking reason.
I mean, I think she might have been trying to move him, but there was probably a better way to do it. Maybe she swapped his fucking pain meds with a laxative, so he wasn't pain. Karen Rutledge, who was the home's nursing union rep, also testified, quote, Beth would spend a lot of time with the palliative patients, and someone overheard her telling a patient, it's okay to die. I don't think that was an appropriate thing to be telling a patient. It's not a nurse's place, end quote.
No, it's not.
No, but she's already feeling godly.
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't think I would want my nurse to tell me it's okay to die. That would just... I definitely don't.
I would ask for another nurse, actually.
Also, I'd ask for the doctor and be like, what is my prognosis? The staff also voiced concerns about Beth, highlighting the time when she neglected a patient's breathing problems for 3 days, forgot, quote-unquote, to treat a finger injury because she was, quote-unquote, busy, and made a resident wait for his pain meds. Which I guess at least she gave them to him.
Well, yeah, at least he got some, I guess, but still.
The representative from the staff said, quote, she's still here. Nothing ever happens, end quote. Beth's bosses at Carousel Care threatened to report her to the College of Nurses, but that never actually happened either.
Why?
I don't know. And then this one is not really, like, you can't file this as an official complaint, but one Halloween, she did come to work dressed as the Grim Reaper.
Are you fucking kidding?
I am not.
Wrong time, wrong place, Beth.
Wrong place, Beth.
Oh.
Oh. Yeah, head and hands. I don't know.
Oh my god.
Despite all of that, she was able to keep her job by appearing appropriately contrite and apologetic and not killing anyone for a couple months and whatnot, like, improving. At one point in August 2011, so 4 years since her last murder, Carousel Care recommended that Beth take a leave of absence. Beth declined. And instead murdered 3 more patients. Gladys Millard, Helen Matheson, and Mary Zerowinski.
I wonder if it was because they were trying to get her to take the leave of absence and that was a way for her to, like, I'll show you.
I just thought of it as, like, that's a stressor in her life. Okay. And she kind of just flipped out. But not in a, like, not in a very logical way because... You would think if you murder 3 patients immediately you would think if 3 of your patients died immediately after you were told to take a leave of absence, that someone would look into that.
Red flags.
You would think.
Red flags. Okay. So clearly her bosses weren't really on top of their stuff.
Her bosses were colorblind. But after she killed those 3 women, she did take a couple of years off of murdering. Perhaps due to the threat of being reported to the College of Nurses.
Okay.
However, in the summer of 2013, Beth killed Helen Young, another woman with dementia. And as Beth said, she was very difficult to deal with. Helen hated being institutionalized and complained loudly about it, often saying that she would rather die than remain in Carousel Care home.
Yeah.
And Beth took her at her word. and afterward consoled one of Helen's relatives, letting them weep into her shoulder. I'm going to say, if she had a penis, she'd be rock hard.
Ugh.
Like, you know, and you let this, like, you let this family member weep into your shoulders? Ugh, that's so disgusting.
It's diabolical.
Ugh, yeah. In 2014, Beth took her last victim at Caris Aunt Care, Maureen Pickering. Maureen was receiving one-on-one care because she had dementia, and she also got aggressive with the other patients.
Okay.
But you're working at a fucking nursing home. It happens.
Yeah, and you have dementia. You're confused. You don't know where you are. Yeah. You don't know what's going on. Like,
Beth described Maureen as such. Quote, Maureen Pickering was a handful. She just got harder and harder to look after. And one night when I had to look after her, I started to get that feeling, that surge again. I thought, I don't want her to die, but if I could somehow give her enough to give her a coma or change her brain waves, maybe make her less mobile, less hard to handle.
Aww.
So yeah, I overdosed her. End quote. Doesn't sound like a very good nurse either. I don't really know how insulin relates to the brain waves. I mean, a coma will fuck it up.
Yeah.
So, after numerous warnings, a one-day suspension, a five-day suspension, and a string of medication errors, Beth was finally fired.
Oh, finally. Okay.
2014. She was working there since probably 2007?
Yeah. Okay.
When her bosses filled out a five-page termination report for the Ontario College of Nurses, they ran out of room to list all instances of her misconduct.
Yeah.
Which is a bad look on Caris Aunt Care, I have to say.
Well, it does, right? Because if you're getting into your second page...
That's too many pages.
That's too many pages. Five, okay. All right.
Yeah. The nurses' union once again helped Beth protest the termination, and Caris Aunt Care even ended up writing a letter of reference for Beth, describing her as a good problem solver with strong communication skills, who had left Caris Aunt Care to pursue other opportunities.
Okay.
So, armed with that reference letter, Beth got a new job at Meadow Park Long-Term Care, also in London, Ontario. And that's where she murdered her last victim, who is Arpad Horvath. And she just got tired of his dementia related yells, and he was aggressive too and whatnot. An inquiry found that no autopsy was performed and his insulin levels were not tested, but Beth did phone the hospital to check that Arpad was dead. Anywho.
Oh, Beth.
Well, Beth soon quit this job and checked into rehab for a few weeks.
Okay.
It was a good attempt. The rehab was not successful. But she was able to start a new job at a long-term home in Paris, Ontario. Which I don't really understand what's happening in Ontario. Are they just all European cities in Canada? What the fuck?
It's a lot of French.
Paris. Well, at this new job, she tried to kill two more times. But both Sandra Towler and Beverly Bertram survived.
Thank God.
Yeah. And then a week after her attempt on Beverly Bertram's life, Beth was offered a job in an elementary school.
Oh my God.
To help with diabetic children. This was the breaking point for Beth, although it's unclear like whether she actually placed value on children's lives or she just knew other people did.
Okay.
So Beth packed her bags and ended up at Toronto's Center for Addiction and Mental Health, where she confessed to multiple psychiatrists who finally took her seriously. It is their job.
Yes.
Someone's doing their goddamn job.
Finally.
Jesus. So Beth was given a life sentence with no chance of parole for 25 years, for 8 counts of first-degree murder, 4 counts of attempted murder, and 2 counts of aggravated assault. She will be eligible for parole in 2041, but as Justice Bruce Thomas noted at her sentencing, she's unlikely to ever get it.
I hope not.
I know. Beth is serving her time at Institut Felipe Pened de Material, which is a hospital for female inmates with mental illness.
Hopefully she's not monitoring their insulin.
No, I think she's a patient there.
I know, but still.
Yeah, just don't get your hands on that insulin.
Jeez.
So, like any good serial killer, Beth admits that she knew right from wrong, but she did deflect responsibility, and she does have 5 helpful facts that she thinks will help prevent something like this from happening ever again. Thanks, Beth.
Okay. Kind of like the Vancouver child killers. How
oh my god.
To get abducted.
Yep, exactly mm-hmm. like that.
All right, let's have
it. Well, her 5 things are controls on insulin. Yes. Medication room oversight.
Yes.
Yep. Mental health check-ins.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
An advocate for dementia patients. Yes, 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 yes.
Yes. Yes.
And active responses to confessions, which I don't know about that one. She confessed, I didn't even tell you, she confessed to a girlfriend. She confessed to one of the teenage volunteers. Like, she confessed, and everyone was like, oh, that's weird. So, in response to this, Carison care managers told staff that security cameras were going to be installed in the medication room after opioids went missing.
Okay.
Wonder who did that.
Mm-hmm.
But those cameras were never installed.
Oh, well.
Beth also has some strong words for her psychiatrist, whom she met with every month. So she was meeting with a... This psychiatrist maybe didn't do his job. Beth complained that he didn't probe during their visits. He would just ask how she was doing. She would answer fine, and she'd get her refill.
Oh.
Not to throw my psychiatrist under the bus, which is kind of how we do it. But I'm doing fine. No murders.
You're not murdering people. So.
Maybe I'm not doing necessarily fine, but I'm not murdering people.
Well, and you're not, like, telling people you're murdering people, too, right?
Nope.
Because she was telling people.
Okay. Nope.
All right.
So using insulin as the murder weapon is the cherry on top. So she chose insulin because she knew it wouldn't be missed, unlike narcotics.
Okay.
Quote, it wasn't counted, and I knew that it was something that could kill people. The lack of following up on insulin is what made it available to me. There's 120 units of insulin per cartridge, but if I had dialed up 15, I could leave the nurse's station, take out the insulin pen, and dial up another 50. There was never a time when it was questioned why we were going through more insulin than others. Insulin is not counted the same way narcotics are, end quote.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fair point. So she's not stupid, but she's evil.
Yes. So Carison Care now check when a nurse dials up insulin right up to the time of injection. But that is extremely time consuming as well. And staff consuming. You gotta have 2 staff to give an insulin injection every time, basically.
Yeah. That's, well, they had other warnings.
Yeah. So insulin administration also helped conceal Beth's crimes, as if even if an autopsy was performed, it's not easy to identify that someone died from an insulin overdose. This article I read said there's no post-mortem test for low blood sugar, which I'm 50-50 on whether I believe that. But the symptoms of low blood sugar mimic the symptoms of a lot of other diseases too, so.
Yeah.
And it's also difficult to distinguish natural insulin that the body makes from synthetic insulin. And so it's hard to see that. And death from an overdose can take days to occur, which gives the synthetic insulin time to wash out of the system.
Okay.
I don't think she knew all of this, but she definitely knew that insulin wasn't monitored.
Yeah.
Commissioner Eileen Gillespie offered the final words on Elizabeth's crime. Quote, during the inquiry, I heard it suggested that the offenses were mercy killings designed to end the victim's suffering. Nothing could be farther from the truth. When Vetlafter committed the offenses, the victims were still enjoying their lives, and their loved ones were still enjoying time with them. It was not mercy to harm or kill these people, end quote.
Exactly.
Preach it, Eileen.
Oh, yeah.
So in 2019, Canada released a report on the state, by that I mean Ontario, Canada, released a report on the state of long-term care facilities. And Gillespie also spoke on the circumstances that allowed Beth to get away with her crimes for so long. So, quote, "What this finding highlights is that there's no simple fix. We cannot point our fingers at any given individual or organization, identify the shortcomings we find there, and end the threat posed by wrongdoers such as Whitlafter by remedying these shortcomings. Systemic issues require a systemic response," end quote.
I mean, that's fair, but still, they had a lot of
warning.
They had
so much warning, though. Let me just say nothing happened to Care or Sans Care. Wow. Actually, somebody Google that. Is it still open? I'll move on to this report that Ontario released. It calls for sweeping changes to fix these systemic vulnerabilities. And it has 91 recommendations that include more intensive ministry oversight of nursing homes, more ministry funding for training and education of nursing home staff, increasing the number of nurses and staff in the homes, and also urge nursing homes to build a more stable supply of staff while limiting the use of agency nurses who can roam from one nurse from one workplace to another. This report also called for the government grants of up to $200,000, maybe Canadian, per home, per nursing home, to make infrastructure and other changes to increase the safety of their patients. However, there are 626 nursing homes in Ontario, which would require a significant amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
Ontario's Minister of Long-Term Care, Marilee Fullerton, promised, quote, "New funding to address the recommendations. We are taking immediate action. We will spend the next year acting on what we heard today," end quote. Which is a politician's speech, if I've ever heard it.
Yeah. Care or Sans Care is still open.
Get your friends out of there.
Yeah. Their website says that they have 1,300 residents in 15 long-term care facilities and 700 residents in 10 retirement homes.
Damn.
So they are still very much open.
Very much alive.
Very, very much in business.
Okay. Now we know.
Yeah.
Going back to Marilee and her speech about nothing, she was super vague about how much new funding would be provided, which recommendations would be adopted first, or how long it would take to implement these changes. Jane Midas, a lawyer representing the Ontario Association of Residents Council, I don't know what that is, but she was critical of the report as it was too vague on how funding gaps would be filled, and also that it failed to recommend annual inspections. Quote from Jane, "Yes, we need to know about healthcare killers, but we also need to know about good care. And if the ministry is not looking to see if good quality care is happening, we don't know that it will," end quote.
Yeah, that's true.
100%.
I'm also curious if this, the long-term care, is part of their health insurance.
Honestly, I don't. Yeah, Canada is so different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Canadians. Should we move there?
Would they let us?
Probably not.
I think our border's still closed for
COVID. Oh, yeah, for COVID. I'm a microbiologist. Let me through. I don't know how to study viruses, though. I'm useless. John Matheson, who is Helen Matheson's son, said of the report, quote, "I got some closure, I guess. You get more closure each time something good comes of it. And if the good keeps happening, it gets easier to deal with. The biggest thing is, what happens to the report after today? Does the government take it and put it in a closet somewhere to collect dust? Or will it act?" End quote. Well, as of February 2020, Ontario had implemented 18 of the 91 recommendations. Capitalism! Capitalism. That's not an accent. Almost 60% of Ontario's long-term care homes, including CareSant, are privately owned and operated for profit, which provides an incentive for the administrators to keep the cost as low as possible. And one way to do that is overstaffing. I'm sorry. No, it's not. It's definitely not that. It's understaffing.
I was going to say.
So when Beth worked there, she was responsible for 32 people during her daytime shifts. And at night, her and one registered practical nurse were responsible for 163 patients.
Oh my God. So how did she even have time to be annoyed with any one particular patient if you're actively making rounds?
I mean, there's a lot of complaints about her ignoring the residents, so.
Well, okay. Then why'd she keep visiting the ones that were annoying to her?
I know, just ignore those ones. Don't do that, nurses.
No, do not.
But, like, she just...
Send the other staff member in there.
She kept poking at, like, the annoyance so she could get mad, it seems like.
Yeah, she wanted to do it.
Working in a long-term care home is not necessarily an appealing job. Mm-mm. Long hours, heavy workload, lower pay than in hospitals. You have these patients that have dementia that can be aggressive, can be sexually harassing.
Yeah.
Or just old, and they're gonna, you might make friends and they die. Like, that's sad too.
So just to put this out there, not that it's completely applicable, but so sometimes also people end up at long-term care facilities if they've had like an injury and they need just a little bit of care, you know, like a broken hip or something like that. And so one of my family members had to go to one of the long-term care facilities, and we went to go visit, and it just smells so
bad. There's a distinctive smell.
It is. And I don't know what it is, but it gives me heebie-jeebies.
Not to throw anything under the bus, but in the town I used to live in, there's a number of nursing homes, and I had friends that were in a number of them. Mm-hmm. And so my worst example is of a guy that died probably like 8 p.m. and didn't get discovered for 14 hours.
14?
And it definitely was not as big a nursing home as like Harrison Care sounds like.
14 hours.
Yeah, you've missed breakfast by that point, like.
And lunch. 14 hours?
8 to 8, 10. I guess it...
Well, like, almost
I guess it, lunch. You've missed a coffee break is what my grandma used to call 10 okay. a.m. stuff. And then getting back to these nursing homes, I'm going to say, like, I see that there's a struggle on their side as well. It's not a great job.
Yeah.
And the turnover rates are crazy. There is a 2009 study of facilities in California that cited year-over-year turnover rates of registered nursing staff between 55 and 75% just in 1 year.
Whoa. That's yeah. a lot.
And also, this isn't the worst thing, but I feel like a nursing home is also where a lot of pre-nursing students get their experiences at.
Okay, yeah.
Because they need you. They'll take you.
Oh, yeah.
And at least in the program at my university, you had to have at least volunteer hours in a nursing environment. Like, that was a requirement. So,
okay.
So they also needed the nursing homes, basically.
Yeah.
Bring it to 2021. The report's recommendation for an increase in registered staff at nursing homes didn't really do well. And understaffing has also been blamed for some of Ontario's COVID-related deaths. Apparently, they have a conservative government right now, Canadians, which has also reduced nursing home inspections across the province, moving away from proactive, unplanned inspections to reactive inspections that respond to specific complaints, which I think is the fucking wrong way to do it.
It's definitely you gotta surprise the wrong them. Way to do it. Yeah. This is very disappointing.
Yeah, so let me wrap it up with James Silcox's son, who said that he had to swallow an ugly truth, which was society doesn't care nearly enough about its elderly population. Quote, "We naively thought there was a standard level of care. We were absolutely dead wrong," end quote.
Yeah. I mean, that's the truth. We don't. If you look at how other countries take care of their elderly people, we just don't. We don't respect them enough.
No, we definitely don't respect them enough.
It hurts my heart.
It's hard because I have a hard time imagining having my parents move in with, like, having to take care of my own parents. There's some weird block there, but it's probably just, there's some weird block there, but, like,
I joke with my mom all the time that I'm just going to put everybody, I'm going to get a bunch of those really nice rocking chairs and just stick them all on my front porch.
I'm like,
I'll take care of you.
Dad, you better have this, like, figured out for me. So, I don't know, go hug your grandparents. I don't have any alive.
Yeah.
I think they all died of natural causes.
I have the most wonderfully crazy Gigi. She's the best. She's still kicking and doing her thing. And we are blessed to still have her as a part of our life. And so this story just breaks my heart.
Yeah, my grandmothers were both pretty long-lived, late 80s, late 90s for both of them. And they also never had to spend that much time in a nursing home. I don't think one of them ever did because she was having a hip surgery or something and she was on Coumadin and she just bled out. Mm-hmm. And my other grandma would probably spend maybe a year in a nursing home. My mom would go visit her and spend the night like once a week.
Yeah, so she's checking in.
And I kind of think by the end of that was the one that was in her late 90s. By the end, I think she kind of was just like, this is enough.
But still, but it doesn't mean Beth can come in and give you insulin.
Judy gets to decide if she's going to die, okay? Let her. Well, you want to go into astrology?
Yeah, let's...
Want to hazard a guess on what sign Beth is?
I'm not as good as Sarah is
I know.
At this guessing game. I'm going to say she's a Libra.
I love that answer because I hate Libras, but... I was trying to give you a hint. She's a Gemini.
Oh, son of a bitch.
She was born on June 10, 1967. I think we will end up seeing a number of Geminis in this podcast. Because honestly, being able to present one side to the world while keeping this other side hidden is a huge attribute for a criminal.
Oh, absolutely. But not all of us are criminals. Some of us are just really fun people. I think we've done Gemini murderers more than any other sign.
Well, Capricorn.
Well, you and Sarah had a role of Geminis during
that
Gemini
was accidental.
Season.
Well, Sarah's might not have been. Mine totally was. But yeah, so because she definitely, there's a lot of complaints, but she also had a nice side. Like she would bring them pies, her residents' pies for their birthdays and stuff. So,
and let grieving family members cry on their shoulder.
Yeah, great. So, we've talked about Geminis. I don't want to talk about Gemini too much right now. Meredith's sensitive. So, one aspect that I'm going to talk about for Beth is her sun in Gemini, which is sextile to Lilith in Aries. So, in astrology, Lilith is a comet. And in mythology, Lilith was the original wife of Adam in the Garden of Eden, who refused to submit to Adam, would not lie beneath him, because she wanted to be treated as an equal. Although, girl, it's hard, but it's tiring being on top. But I'm 100% on board for this, Lilith. I love you, Lilith. God was not 100% on board with this. Lilith was cast out of the Garden of Eden, and Adam got a new wife, Eve. Hi, welcome. Get underneath me. After Lilith left the Garden of Eden, she transformed into a she-devil, who had thousands of demon children with other demons. Then sent three angels after Lilith to tell her that if she didn't go back to the Garden of Eden, they would kill 100 of her children each day. Lilith did not go back, so she ends up murdering human babies in retaliation for the death of her own children.
Okay, well, I don't like that.
I love Lilith, but she does have a dark side. Like,
did you ever watch Supernatural?
No, I never have.
It's interesting how they portray Lilith.
Okay, I was wondering if that's where you got your Lilith information from.
No, they present her in a very interesting manner in that show.
I haven't picked my witch's name yet. I thought about Lilith just because she's a feminist icon for a lot of people. Yeah. Maybe she went a little far, but they were murdering her children too.
True.
But, like I said, she has a dark side. And so the position of Lilith in your natal chart can show you how you are most likely to act on your own darker impulses.
Mm-hmm.
A sextile is usually harmonious. And so a person with a sun in Gemini, sextile to a Lilith in Aries, are usually comfortable with the darker side of their nature, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. I don't trust anyone that's happy all the time. But one could say that Beth was way, way too comfortable with her dark side.
Yeah.
And that is Beth Wetlaufer.
I just had to check my Lilith. It's in Scorpio.
Oh my god. That's going to be a fucking wreck, but okay.
But it's not. We're not Twinkies over here. Okay,
so. So, that wraps up the story. I have some ass news.
Ass news.
I guess I felt like teaching today because I have another. We didn't talk about Lilith before, and I have another new astrology term. So today we're going to talk about Chiron.
Okay.
So what is Chiron with regards to space?
Okay.
It's actually kind of hard to say. It's referred to as a comet in most astrological situations, but science has also called it a small solar system body, an asteroid, or a minor planet, or a centaur. And so in astronomical parlance, we're going into science for a smidge, a centaur is a solar body that orbits between the asteroid belt and the Kuiper belt, and Chiron was the first centaur to be discovered. And whatever the fuck it is, it orbits the sun in the space between Saturn and Uranus.
Okay.
So, if you want to fuck around in astrology, you're also going to dabble in mythology a bit. So, in Greek mythology, Chiron was the most important of the centaurs, which kind of goes back to why they called it He was described as intelligent, civilized, and kind, and was an excellent teacher, especially of the youth, as well as being extremely adept at medicine. However, he was unable to heal himself after he was hit by a poisoned arrow shot by Hercules. Chiron was immortal, so he did not die, but he remained in pain, so he willingly gave up his immortality, which was then exchanged for Prometheus's life, who is currently trapped in a cycle of eternal torment, chained to a rock, or an eagle would peck out his liver every day, and so, ever so conveniently, it would grow back every night.
Oh.
And Prometheus was in this predicament because he had stolen fire from the gods and given it to humanity, which led Zeus to sentence him to this eternal torment. Somehow, Hercules made a deal with Zeus to exchange Chiron's immortality for the life of Prometheus. I don't know if Chiron was invited to these discussions. But Zeus was Chiron's half-brother, and as Chiron had willingly given up his immortality, Zeus honored him by placing him among the stars.
Oh.
This is a paragraph of incestuous Greek mythology, and if you are better at this than me... Ooh, I tried.
Let us know.
There'll be a quiz next episode. Okay.
No, there won't.
No, but I'll forget. No.
That one's already pre-recorded.
Yeah, we recorded it. You guys are safe.
You're welcome.
Meredith's looking out for the listeners. I'm trying to torment the listeners. So, the position of this solar body, Chiron, can help you understand and address areas where you have experienced trauma in your life. Chiron is a healer.
Okay.
So Chiron went into retrograde on July 15, so a little bit before this one's released, And it will remain there until December 19th. So basically we have the whole rest of the year with Chiron in retrograde. So retrograde basically just means the planet's moving backwards in relation to the Earth. But this is an illusion. All solar bodies are generally going forward around the sun. It's just there's differences in speed. Some of them have a weird fucking orbit. And it makes it look like it's moving backwards. But in any case, Chiron's in retrograde. So it's asking you to look back and work on healing from past trauma.
Okay.
Which is to say, things are about to get real. If you let them.
Okay.
I think it's safe to say that we all have trauma of some kind. And trying to bury that trauma and pretend it didn't happen will, you know, it'll get you in the end.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And even if you can't think of a very specific deep wound, this pandemic and the isolation that accompanied it, that was a traumatic event. And it affected everybody in some way.
And sometimes it still is, so.
I'm going to say it's affecting everyone in some way, because it's still affecting me as well. Chiron was the healer who could not heal himself, but his energy is supposed to help others heal.
Okay.
Chiron will be in retrograde in Aries for this time, which is that bold, action-oriented sign. So it's really saying, address this past shit, look at it in the face, and then move on.
Okay.
Chiron can be a very powerful force for change, but any sort of healing work can be very overwhelming, so know that a roller coaster of emotions should be expected, and negative emotions can be productive. You have to feel them.
You gotta let it out.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say hashtag therapy. It is for everyone. I technically graduated from my last bout of therapy in March, but I've been mulling over the idea of going back again, so it's in the fucking water. And just to wrap it up, just to say that doing this mental health introspection, it can be exhausting, it can be discouraging, it can be a lot of unpleasant things. So this is also a great time to remind everyone to prioritize self-care when you're doing this hard work to better yourself.
I am getting a massage this weekend for the first time in forever.
I was trying to get a massage before I went camping last weekend, but they canceled my massage.
Oh, that's
the masseuse hurt themselves.
Oh no.
But that does remind me I should call my massage place.
Yeah, reschedule that shit.
For fucking sure.
So I have a little bit more astrology, trying to do Sarah proud.
Sarah!
So on Thursday, July 22nd, the sun enters Leo.
Leo season!
Leo is ruled by the sun and the dazzling celestial body that governs life and vitality. So this sunny switch will bring a joyful sense of optimism and a big boost to our confidence. This is the perfect time to embrace your inner superstar and chase your passions in life. Leo season celebrates love, self-confidence, generosity, romance, dignity, joy, enthusiasm, pride, courage, and passion. So live in the moment, have some fun, drop your worries, and just let your life flow. This is a time to be creative, to stand in the spotlight, and to celebrate.
I'm going to wrap that back into Chiron in retrograde. Leos also like to be the best. So they want to be the best version of themselves. They want to appear to be the best to other people sometimes. But if you want to be the best version of yourself, you might want to look into some of those traumas that you got going on. But
yeah. So we also have on Friday, July 23rd, so the day after the sun enters Leo, we will get a full moon in Aquarius.
Yay!
So this lunation encourages us to follow the beat of our own drum, and it's a good day to kind of unleash your inner rebel, if you will. So while Leo season has us embracing the kind of all about me type attitude, the full moon in the opposite free-thinking sign of Aquarius inspires us to consider ways that we can show up for more of the collective. So whether it's your inner circle of friends or your entire community, use this lunation as an excuse to show off your quirky eccentricities, right? Did I say that right?
That sounds fine.
I'm too deep here, so that make you stand out from the crowd and let go of your self-consciousness and just truly be your authentic self and connect with other people.
Awesome. That sounds fun.
So again, we'd like to thank Anna from Oregon for reaching out. And I am mailing your sticker sometime this week. And if you would like a sticker too, it's kind of tit for tat, folks. So reach out and connect with us. You can reach us on Twitter at True Trine, on Instagram at True Crime Trine, on Facebook at TCT Podcast. You can email us directly, like Anna did, at truecrimetrine@gmail.com. And please check out our website at www.truecrimetrine.com.
I'm sure D.H. Lawrence said something, but we can talk about that next time.
Music for our podcast was handcrafted by the talented and creative minds of Mike Warren and Pete Ortega. Our artwork was imagined and skillfully designed by the lovely Sarah Guest. As for production, well, they call me post-production. Show notes are available upon request. Just email truecrimetrine@gmail.com. Join us again next week for another tantalizing episode.